Take a deep breath. And remember, there's a power. Breathing you. This is your space of sanity in an evolving world, where we learn about spiritual law and how to apply it to our lives in a way that is practical and life-changing. This is where we remember truth to make the world a better place, one person at a time. I'm Claire Lautier, inspirational speaker, teacher of the technology of transformation, and a certified life mastery consultant and spiritual growth mentor. Welcome to the Grace Space. Why do we store the past inside us instead of letting it go? Why do we hold on to pain? Because we can't handle it. It's a paradox. In this episode, we'll explore our tendency to stockpile emotional energy or samskaras, and the often serious consequences this has on our life. The truth is, we were never taught to handle our emotional energy. It's commonly accepted that we should live our life, choose our relationships, our work, and generally base our decisions on what will maximize pleasure and minimize pain. This is what most people are engaged in, and it's considered totally normal and even sensible to adopt this approach. It's evident in our broken medical system, for example, which pushes drugs to handle symptoms without inquiring into the source of the disease. The problem is that avoiding pain or treating it superficially doesn't make the pain go away. It only increases the pressure we feel from never having dealt with it. When we make life choices in order to avoid disturbing the sleeping dragon, we never engage the source of our suffering, which is the fact that we ourselves have stored this energy inside us, and we are the only ones who can dissolve it. While we hold on to these unresolved energies of the past, we block our own life force. We block our own life force energy from circulating and providing the natural, uncaused feelings of well-being that we long for. And when we can't handle the range of emotions that our heart continually emanates as frequencies, we shut ourselves down and live in grayscale, very limited range. This can have serious consequences for our lives that last for years and cause great suffering for ourselves and others. I'll share later in the episode how not being able to handle the full range of my own emotions led to just such a situation. Freedom is knowing that no matter what happens in your life, and especially when things don't go the way you wanted, it cannot shake your profound peace and well-being. You never needed life to give you those feelings. You never needed another person to give you those feelings, because their source is within you. But while you're all blocked up inside, you'll never know it. Let's explore this together and see what we can let go of today. Last week, we talked about samskaras, these impressions or packets of energy associated with past experiences that we store inside ourselves as memories, whether they're conscious or not. They act as blockages that impede the flow of our life force. Another way to think of them is as scars. That's actually how I first taught myself to remember the term samskara. When I first heard it used by my teacher, he would refer to the unresolved past in us as a samskara, and I retained the sound scar. And a samskara is kind of like a scar. It's something that has left a mark, an impression in you. Something happened and you didn't like it, The event is over. It's not still happening, but it marked us. It left an impression. And because we've stored the energy of the event and all of its details and how we felt about it inside us, it's still present and taking up space and influencing perception, even when the energy is dormant, even when the event is long gone. It's blocking the flow. And the more samskaras we've got stored up inside us, and believe me, we've got probably an infinite number, the harder it is to enjoy life. Because sooner or later, something's going to come along and stir up the past and wake it up. And then up comes that packet of energy and emotion that was stored in there. But unless we're fairly conscious and awake, we don't really know what to do with that. We usually just stuff the energy back down again. Why? Because that's the habit. That's what we've always done. Because we don't want to feel it. And this is deadly. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But let's back up a little. Remember, we said that samskaras can be negative or positive. We hold on to both negative and positive experiences. I'm talking about perceptually what we perceive as negative and what we perceive as positive. We want to keep forever a positive moment where something magical happened, something that felt good. You can probably think of a moment like that right now, while as it was happening, as you were savoring the experience, a little voice came in saying, I want to hold on to this moment forever. And you keep replaying it in your mind afterwards over and over to give yourself the same feeling again. You use it like a drug. Then you start comparing other moments to it, and they're never quite as good. Or you try to make the same moment happen again, and it's never quite the same. This is how holding on to a positive samskara gets us into constant comparison, trying to recapture something and then having to mourn the loss of the specialness of that moment. Everyone knows what I'm talking about. Whether it was a first kiss in a relationship or an amazing vacation place that you want to go back to because you idealized your experience there, or a meal that was just exquisite and you can never make it the same way again, or being in the flow as a performer where you're in that situation where you can do no wrong and everything is perfection. Every performer knows what I'm talking about too. You try to get back to that feeling to set yourself up for perfection again, but it doesn't work. This is how very compulsive, involved rituals can begin around performing. Like, I do my warm-up in the same place each time. I set up my dressing table just so, and I walk this way to the stage, making sure to avoid the cracked tiles. I never go to the bathroom until Act Two begins, and I twirl my hat pin 3 times before walking out on stage. Because that amazing show I had, when everything was like butter, I did all those things. So if I do everything just like that again, I should be able to recreate that perfection. And these thoughts aren't even necessarily conscious. We just find ourselves repeating behaviors compulsively. It never works. And there's a kind of hell you can enter into with these compulsive rituals and routines. They create a kind of prison that kills your true creativity and causes anxiety. Now, with maturity, speaking from the performance perspective too, you learn to let go of the good shows as well as the bad ones. You have to allow yourself to die to each moment on stage. That's what being present is. And when you're present, lo and behold, you have an amazing show that was so alive and vibrant in a totally new way because you were there. Any performer, actor, singer, dancer, musician, or athlete knows what I'm talking about. But what we're really trying to do here in the microcosm of the performance world, just using that example, as well as in daily life, is we're trying to control our environment so that we can feel okay inside. The logic is, if I control my environment as a performer, I'll find that elusive flow inside myself again. If I control my environment and life and make sure everything and everyone conforms to my expectations and what I need, I'll feel better inside. In other words, I'll feel my energy flowing because that's all we really want, to feel our own energy flowing. It feels so good. But we attribute that feeling of flow to everything outside of ourselves. And we're constantly trying to control the outside so nothing out there shuts down the flow. The funny thing is that we believe we actually have the ability to control things out there. At least we're still trying. Back in the day, we used to do all kinds of crazy things backstage to make ourselves laugh. And I know it still happens all the time. I'm talking about back in the day when I was in the business. And one thing that always cracked me up was this shtick with the monitor. There are monitors backstage, TV screens that show you what's going on the stage while you're off the stage so that you can, you know, stay in the flow of the show, know what's going on, know when your entrance is coming up. So sometimes we would be back in the green room while the show was going on. You could see your fellow performers on the stage while you're off stage on the screen there. And one of the games we used to play sometimes to amuse ourselves was to come up to the monitor and use our hands to move a performer across the stage as if we were exercising mind control, making the person move, usually accompanied by, you know, stupid sound effects and something like, "Aha, I command you, tiny human, to mix a drink at the bar. Yes, do it, peon. And now, sit down on the couch. Do the bidding of the Almighty One. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha." And of course, the actor was going to move anyway. It was part of the blocking. We all knew that. It's the stupidest game in the world. But for some reason, it made me laugh. We would amuse ourselves pretending to be omniscient and all-powerful gods, moving these little characters across the screen as if they had no choice but to do our bidding. Maybe it's so funny because there's a recognition that this is a bit like how we are in life. The ego thinks it's controlling things and people and outcomes by some kind of voodoo. It has this grand delusion of control. And I would even say there is a field of consciousness, which the ego represents in our own being, that is all about this control. And we're really feeling that field attempting to take over the mind of humanity at this time. So it's really, really important to be aware of this. The ego, that energy, okay, refuses to acknowledge that everything that happens is a consequence of the infinite field of divinity and not itself. It has usurped the place of divinity. That's not an exaggeration. And it insists on perpetuating the illusion that life cannot happen without its intervention in ways both gross and subtle. And furthermore, that if life doesn't show up the way it wants, that something is wrong. The universe is out of order. This is the narcissism of the ego. If I don't get what I want, God is wrong. So it's constantly trying to control everything out there to produce the desired result. Notice this constant need for control, from subtle manipulation to attempts at domination, to the insistence of the egoic mind has on labeling everything in our experience. I mean, can you go for a walk in nature without the voice in your head jumping in with the name of that tree that you were just admiring? Do you really need to know the name of the tree? Why can't it just be a tree? Instead, your mind jumps in and starts comparing that tree to all the other trees it has categorized, or brings back a memory about the time you sat under a tree like that at a family picnic. Now you're no longer having a direct experience of the tree. You're lost in your mind. And the more you're lost in your mind, the less you will feel your heart. The compulsive need of the egoic mind to know about something strangles the experience and makes it impossible to be present. Why does it need to know about something? Because that's the illusion of being in control. If I know the name of the tree, I'm somehow in more control. I'm in charge. If I can influence someone's behavior to be like I need it to be to feel special, I remain in control in my mind. As long as I have enough money in the bank, I feel secure. So I have to control my environment accordingly. Living this way is the equivalent of being in a tiny rowboat and trying to control the ocean. If you're in a tiny rowboat, and that's most of us, in the middle of a vast ocean, your whole life is about trying to keep the waters calm so you don't capsize and drown. But the state of the ocean has nothing to do with you personally. It's being influenced by an infinity of factors that are beyond your control. And when the storms come and the waves begin to surge and the winds blow, we in our tiny rowboat become very afraid. We feel very vulnerable. Our heart flutters and trembles, and we're not comfortable with that. So we've developed all these strategies to try to keep the ocean of life calm. And we're so deluded that we actually believe we have the power to do that, even though it's never worked. We keep trying. A lot of prayer is based on this. If I pray to God, please God, make everything in life just how I want so I can feel okay. Control the ocean of life so I don't drown, right? Think about the last time you asked the higher power, however you may conceive of it, for something. Did you want to get something? Were you looking for something you wanted to have happen or to avoid something that you didn't want to have happen on your own behalf or someone else's? Oh, dear God, please make this person healthy so that I can feel better because I'm scared, right? Oh, God, I need this job. Please, God, I need this job, right? That's a song from A Chorus Line, the musical. It's, God, I hope I get it. I hope I get it. I mean, that's perfect. That's perfect. Here's the truth. Whether you want something or not, whether you like something or not, whether you would prefer something or not, whether you feel like you need it or not, is totally immaterial. You cannot bargain with the universe. Life is unfolding with or without us, whether we like the way it's unfolding or not. The way it's unfolding has nothing to do with us. We have no control over that any more than we can control the vast ocean from our tiny rowboat. It's an infinite field of consciousness that is spontaneously unfolding in perfect divine order because of everything everywhere throughout all time and space. Who are we to say it's not unfolding properly? Because we don't like it. I didn't want this. This isn't working for me. This universe isn't working for me. Something is terribly wrong, right? Yeah, but what about when bad things happen? We need to enlarge our perspective. When someone says, things shouldn't be this way, this is wrong. Now, look, I'm not saying that we shouldn't take action. I'm not saying that. But before we take action, we need to let go of our personal self. And yes, even in the case of terrible events, the worst things imaginable, the exploitation of children, the plundering of planetary resources, mind control, genetic manipulation, the abuse of nature, the abominations committed against animals, the attempt to corral and control everyone in the world. Of course, any feeling person does not want these things to happen, but their existence does not mean that something is wrong in the universe. The reality that is, it's here. The fact that it is means that everything has come together perfectly to make it possible. It is the effect of an infinite number of causes from the Big Bang until now. Creation is evolving over unimaginable arcs of time that have nothing to do with our preferences. We've got to transcend this myopia and start seeing a much bigger picture of our place in the cosmology if we want to evolve to a state of consciousness in which the horrors that I mentioned just now are completely unthinkable, wouldn't even occur to us as a collective, because that's the only way that they cease to be a possibility. So if you pay attention, you will see that something in your mind is attempting to control life all the time. And before we can understand why we hold on to things, why we would accumulate these samskaras within our being. We need to understand that we're trying to control life all the time. Why? So that it will suit our preferences, and our preferences are based on our particular set of blockages, our samskaras. We want to avoid and resist what we don't want, and we want to hold on to and get more of what we do want. As a result, we're in a constant state of resistance or attachment, clinging to things, right? Resisting what we don't want and clinging to the things that we do want. And that is exactly how we store the energy inside ourselves. That's exactly how we block ourselves up. That's what a samskara is. Let's say you meet someone who fits your mental concept of the ideal romantic partner, someone who makes you feel special, expanded, beautiful. Once that person arrives, we tend to become attached and cling to them. And if they leave, we get upset because we've mistaken them for the source of the beautiful feelings of flow we had in their presence. We attributed our energy flow to something outside of us, and we wanted to keep the person or the thing we associated with it. It's like picking a flower because it's beautiful. As soon as you pick it because you want to keep it, you know it's going to die. Or pinning a butterfly in a glass case. What good did it do? Yes, you can admire it, but it's dead. You had to kill it to keep it. Here's the paradox. If you try to keep something, you kill it. But if you die to it right in the very moment that you're in, you remain in the state of flow that you were seeking in the first place. The person who dies to every moment is wise. They understand something key. The feeling of flow, the feeling of love, inspiration, exaltation, joy, or wonder was not caused by something or someone in the outside world. It doesn't belong to the outside world. That energy is already in you, and it was merely liberated in that moment by the something or the someone. When you die to the moment, in other words, you let it go, you let it move through, you let the feelings move through, you don't create another samskara. You don't create and accumulate yet more blockages. Still, it's easier to understand why we would want to hold on to positive experiences, but why is it that we hold on to negative ones? Why would we want to keep something traumatic or terrible or hurtful or frightening? Why would we hold on to something like that? The way of letting go is simply allowing events and their associated emotions to pass through us without impediment. For emotion to go through us, we've got to let it in. In other words, be willing to feel it. But there are a lot of things we don't want to let in, we don't want to feel because they don't feel good. So we resist them, we tighten up against them, and they get stuck. Eventually, we've got so much pressure built up inside, something's got to give. So to be healthy, we need a flow-through system. I use the example of a dock. I'm from Florida, where we have a lot of hurricanes, and our family home is on the water. Just about everyone who lives on the water has a dock, and often a boat at the end of that dock. And every few years, we get a big storm blowing through there, and depending on how severe it is, there can be a powerful storm surge, and that's when the waters swell up and invade the land. And in the process, the water just batters down anything in its way. It's so powerful. If you've ever been tossed by a wave, you know that you're no match for Mother Nature. So when these storm surges come, I mean, there ain't nothing you can do. Anyway, in the nearly 40 years that we've been in that house, many storms have come through and many wooden docks have come and gone. Every so often, a hurricane would come along and blow the dock away, and one time blew the house away, too, just like a bunch of toothpicks. I mean, you look down the coastline and see a whole bunch of spindly wreckage where the docks had been. The water would just knock them to pieces. Then, some clever human beings invented the flow-through dock, and one of our neighbors invested in one. I went to look at it. This dock, it looks like a wooden dock, but it's made of some type of, I guess, like a composite material, and the material is full of tiny holes that you have to look at closely to see. The idea is that when a storm comes and the pressure of the water increases, it'll be able to pass through the dock thanks to these tiny holes. There's much less resistance to the increased pressure, and therefore the dock doesn't break into bits when it's beaten by the water and you don't have to replace it yet again. We are all a little bit like the old-fashioned dock. When the storms came, we braced ourselves, we tried to stand up against the pressure, and we were destroyed. We just couldn't allow the water to flow through us and keep on going. We didn't have the inner space. The energy of an experience is just like that water. When something happens that we cannot handle, there's a storm surge, a tidal wave of energy in motion, emotion, and we batten down the hatches. We say, no, I don't want to feel this, because we can do that by an act of will. And instead of allowing the energy that was stirred up in us by the event to simply flow through us and keep on going, we resisted it. And this is it's just a trauma response, right? I mean, our brain goes into survival, you know, because we refused the emotional response that something engendered in us out of self-protection. And why would we protect ourselves in a situation like that automatically, consciously or unconsciously? Simply because for whatever reason, we did not have the level. We didn't have the level to handle it. We didn't have the emotional and spiritual maturity yet, right? This is what happens in childhood, right? You don't have the level yet. As you grow, as you open up, as you realize that there's nothing to fear, you let go more and more, you allow more and more things to move through you, right? But at the time, for whatever reason, we just didn't have the level of consciousness, of spiritual evolution, not to brace ourselves, tighten, batten down the hatches, and contract against whatever was coming. We didn't want the emotion to permeate us, to move through us. We didn't want to feel it. So we tightened against the emotion, refused it, denied it, avoided it, dissociated from it. That's how it gets stuck. So when we say we can't handle something, what does that mean? When we store samskaras because we couldn't handle something, what are the consequences? Well, they're very serious indeed. And I'm going to tell you a very personal story to illustrate how when you can't handle something and you shove it away inside yourself, it will poison the rest of your life until you deal with it. I once alluded to the fact on this podcast that many years ago I terminated a pregnancy. I did not go through that experience with a lot of consciousness. In fact, very little. I can't say that anyone made me do it. I did it. I had a choice. I made a choice, and I assume full responsibility for it. I don't blame anyone. Had the man in question, who I was in love with, welcomed the surprise, I would have been overjoyed to go forward with it. But he didn't welcome it, and I allowed that to influence my decision, and I took that as a profound rejection of me, my creative power, and the potential for a deeper expression of our love. It was the beginning of a long, slow death because I couldn't handle it. Not that I understood any of this at the time. At the time, I was just numb. A fire went out inside me. The termination was early in the pregnancy. I was given a shot and told that the body would naturally miscarry within a week to 10 days. It was Christmas time, and my family came to visit us. I pretended everything was okay. They left. I soldiered on in a daze. On New Year's Eve, we were invited to a party at the home of a childhood friend of mine. We went, came home early, and continued our Boston Legal marathon. At some point during the viewing, I felt some cramping and went to the bathroom, whereupon everything just came out. I look down at the mass of floating blood and tissue with a mix of horror and fascination. My mind said, I just miscarried. That mass of stuff could have been a baby. Way down deep inside me, some formless emotion was trembling, but I flushed it down the toilet with the rest and walked back to the living room like it was any other trip to the bathroom. The man I loved was sitting on the couch in front of the TV with a drink, and I took my place next to him once again. Okay, he asked with kind concern. It's gone, I said, and probably picked up a bag of chips. I don't remember much else about that night, except that I couldn't seem to feel anything. I was numb. So this was dissociation. It's one of the things that happens when you really can't handle something. You split it away. You experience the event without the feelings, like watching a movie without the soundtrack. I know that because about a week ago, I was working on de-armoring my cervix with a rose quartz wand during a yoni massage. This is a whole other episode. And the memory of that moment in the bathroom came floating up out of the deep. And with it, a storm surge, a tidal wave of tears and wailing that lasted a good 30 minutes. As it was happening, I knew that I was finally feeling, nearly 18 years later, what I couldn't feel back then because I couldn't handle it. And it had been locked up in my cervix through patience, breathing, and persistent massage of the area I had released the samskara. And the movie soundtrack, Frozen in Time, finally synced up with the scene again. I relived that night with its various images and the ironic symbolism of New Year's Eve, beginnings and endings, life and death. It was the end of a beginning, and it was the beginning of the end. And here I was, fully feeling what I hadn't been able to feel all those years ago because I was so afraid of what my heart was doing. I couldn't handle my heart. I couldn't handle the implications that those feelings meant for my life. The heart is indeed like an amazing musical soundtrack accompaniment to life. It's constantly responding. It's so sensitive. Constantly responding to our outer and our inner environment, like this exquisitely sensitive valve that opens and closes in accordance with how we, with all our fears and wants and needs in the past that we've held on to, how we are interacting with life, and whether or not life is showing up the way that we prefer so that we can maintain our precarious balance. And of course, life is hardly ever showing up that way. It's always a problem. And the real problem is that we can't handle our very own heart and all the frequencies it produces. It is emanating a frequency 24/7, and that frequency is continually changing. It might as well be playing the piano. It has so many notes, more notes than any piano. But we don't want it to play all the notes. We only want it to play the notes we can handle. We want it to be in our comfort zone. So we're constantly trying to control life so that our heart will stay within the range of notes that we feel comfortable with, and we won't have to feel the notes that are upsetting, which is, of course, impossible. And can you see how very limiting this is to your life and soul? And what a slave we become to the tyranny of all these blockages we're holding inside ourselves? Because whenever those samskaras get stirred up by life, as they inevitably will, the heart starts trembling in response to them, and we're toast. What if you could simply allow your heart to play its entire range of frequencies? Then you wouldn't have to control life anymore. You could just appreciate it, whether or not it suits your preference. You wouldn't have to control people anymore. You could just love them, and your love would be unconditional. They wouldn't have to remain within a range of acceptable behaviors for you to be okay. Rather than focusing all your attention and energy on manipulating the constantly moving scenery of life and strategizing your way through it for maximum control, you could focus your attention and energy within yourself, dissolving the stuck emotional energy that you've been holding on to forever and that's been making your life so difficult. If we can allow our heart to feel and produce emotions, all of our emotions, and allow those emotions to flow through us instead of trapping them inside through resistance to feeling them, that's letting go. Let your heart play all the notes, and you will no longer be a prisoner of your wounds. You will have an inner spaciousness that allows more and more life force energy to flow through you, and that is what feels good. Then you realize that that was within you the whole time. It has nothing to do with anything or anyone else, and all you have to do is let go of what's in the way. Remember, the spiritual path is not a process of accumulation, but a process of simplification, of letting go. Learn to handle what you feel. Learn to let it flow through without resistance or attachment. That means you fully feel everything. If you don't, the consequences are serious for your life and your health. Because when I couldn't handle my own emotions all those years ago, I shut down parts of myself that negatively affected my relationships, my creative life, my financial life. If you shut down parts of yourself because you're afraid to feel, you live within a very narrow bandwidth of experience and you are ruled by fear. You aren't really living. You're the walking dead. I am witnessing now and living today the fruit of that time when I couldn't allow my heart to play all the notes. I couldn't allow myself to feel those frequencies. And that inability influenced all of my decision making and put me on certain timelines. And of course, I'm not saying, oh, I shouldn't have done that. Things should have been different, right? That's exactly what everything happened in the perfection of that time. Everything that happens is for our evolution, right? But when you realize how blocked you were in the past and how much suffering that created for yourself and others, naturally, you would want to function differently. You would want to learn to let go. You would want to learn to feel all of your feelings and allow life to flow. It's just so much easier that way. So there's no regret. There's no, you know, shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? I mean, that's shoulda, coulda, woulda is completely useless. But there is growth and recognition with spiritual maturity that we sure have made things harder for ourselves than they had to be, right? So in the end, I guess, we all give birth to something. We give birth to our own life. Death becomes life again when you give birth to yourself by letting go of yourself. Don't be afraid of your heart. Just experience it. That's what it's there for. Feel the somber notes of sadness. Feel the fear. Feel the loneliness. It's okay. It also has beautiful frequencies of bliss and ecstasy to share with you as the energy moves up from the personal to the spiritual heart and beyond. The fewer blockages you have, the more open space you have, the more of your own beautiful energy you will start to feel. If you let the heart express itself freely, it will reveal more and more of its exquisite subtlety and expansiveness, and you will release more and more of the past in you so that you can be free. I'll see you next time. Meanwhile, walk in grace. Thank you for joining me in the grace space, where you're always in the right place. If you love this podcast, I invite you to subscribe to it and submit a review if you feel called to do so. Also, be sure to sign up for my newsletter using the link in the show notes. I look forward to spending this time with you again next week. Meanwhile, walk in grace.